Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is going to be a weird episode because Tim and I recorded earlier today. And it was a good show. It's all about Andretti. We're like, hey, not much is happening. Let's talk a little bit of Andretti. And we dove deep. And I made a comment in the show, and you'll hear this later, about Fernando Alonso and a supposed Red Bull offer. But the reason that we're jumping in with this now is because Fernando Alonso has agreed to a multi-year partnership with Aston Martin, not just now, but also when they have their Honda engines in 2026. And apparently, Tim, it goes beyond his career as a racing driver. So you just spoke to him. What do we know?
Yeah, it's a multi-year deal, Adam, that, like you had said, takes us into 2026 when we have that new power units regulation change coming on board. I feel bad for Andretti, first of all, because the last time we were going to do an Andretti podcast, Lewis Hamilton decided
Lewis Hamilton left Ferrari. Went to Ferrari. Yeah, that's right. That's true. Wow, you have a good memory. Holy smokes.
Man.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so apologies to the Andretti podcast. That will see the light of day, though. So anyways, okay, I digress. No, this is great. Adam, this is really good for Aston Martin. This is really good for Fernando Alonso. I had heard inklings about this as we were headed into the Japanese Grand Prix that he was looking for a multi-year deal with Aston Martin and that something was close and was on the horizon. That's why whenever we talked about Fernando Alonso on the pod, I was always saying, hey, yeah, you know, he wants to be Aston Martin. He wants to... So there you go. Oh, no, you're muted.
Yeah. Sorry, my mic muted. But yeah, I said don't listen too much to the rumors is what you were saying, right?
Like, exactly.
And you know what's funny about it, Tim, is you were so emphatic about it. You'd be like, ah, it's BS. Don't listen to that. And I was like, wow, he's really aggressive on the Fernando stuff. So this is great. I mean, great. It really does give Aston Martin an identity for the next few years with a world champion. Right.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, it's a good partnership. And I think this is, you know, this is the longest. And Fernando had said this to us because we literally just got done. I literally just got done talking to Fernando before I jumped onto this podcast. But he's had, this would be the longest contract that he has had with a team for his F1 career. And it shows how comfortable he is within the team. It shows that he believes in the project. It shows that he thinks that they are going to be competitive. Mm-hmm. And he feels that that time is coming soon. And I think it's interesting to note that, you know, I'd asked him about Honda because his relationship with Honda in the past was a rocky one, considering with how things ended with himself, Honda, McLaren, and that whole saga. And he's been able to patch things up. They've been able to patch things up, I should say. And he really believes in what Honda's doing now, how competitive they are now. And for him, that was really important, Adam. He really wanted to make sure that the power unit and the team were going to be on the same page for 2026. Mm-hmm. And by the sounds of it, you know, they are. It sounds like Honda's, you know, really should probably be competitive, very competitive in 2026, considering where they're leaving, right? They're leaving on being the fastest power unit in Formula One right now. When we get the regulation change, most likely a lot of that stuff will transfer over and they'll still be just as competitive, maybe even more so. We don't know. Mm-hmm. But he was very excited about that entire project when I spoke with him about it. So I thought that was really interesting when talking to him, Adam.
Well, and what do you think that actually means? Like, what is tangible about that, that people can take away? You know, I know that there was some talk about Lewis Hamilton wanting to be a Mercedes ambassador after, you know, after his contract was up with them. And ultimately, they didn't seem interested in signing an extension that led into his retirement, because mm-hmm. Apparently it was going to be 5 to 10 years mm-hmm. or a lifetime, or depending upon whatever reports you read. So the Ferrari thing became far more attractive to him because there's apparently some offers on the table for that for them. And that is interesting.
For Fernando, yeah. I mean, he wasn't going to retire. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't just going to see this year through and then just retire from racing altogether. He still has other interests. He still wants to race in Dakar. He still has his eyes set on endurance racing. Who knows, maybe possibly IndyCar one day, maybe, mm-hmm. who knows. But for him, he liked the Valkyrie project that Aston Martin's got going on, the endurance stuff that they've got going on that side now and at Aston Martin. And that's something that also very much intrigues him. I think for a big thing about Fernando was the fact that when we met with him pre-Bahrain, he was in a space where he wasn't sure if he wanted to continue with Formula One because of the size of the calendar. He had readjusted how he trains. He readjusted how he takes care of his body. He readjusted what he ate so he could recover fast enough. And he wasn't too sure about the travel because there was just mm-hmm. so much of it. So he wasn't sure if like the passion, the desire for Formula One racing was still going to be there once he got into it. But he had said once he had navigated the first 3 to 4 races, and I'm paraphrasing here, that was essentially the sign that said, yes, you know, I still want to do this. I still love it. I still am extremely passionate about Formula One. I eat, sleep, breathe it still. This traveling, which was one of the harsher legs on the calendar, he's like, I feel really good after it. Let's continue going down this road. And he did have conversations with other teams, Adam.
Do you know who those teams were?
He didn't mention who they were, but I mean, I'm sure we can all assume.
Mercedes has to be in there, right?
I would think so, but you know, who knows really. But I think at the end of the day, Adam, it was those talks weren't serious talks. Like I don't know if he felt that he was being treated as seriously maybe as he should be, or maybe those teams were just looking for 1-year deals and then that was it. Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard other things about other teams wanting to give a driver a 1-year deal, and maybe they want something that's a little more longer term. But Fernando, he wanted something that was going to be a little bit more longer term and have some other benefits on the other side of it as well. And he should. I mean, he's an incredible racing driver. He deserves everything that comes to him because he's like a legend. And so outside of that, though, Adam, I mean, like it was important for him to get this deal done early, so I think he could feel secure at the rest of the season and didn't have to answer any more questions about where you're going to be racing next year, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and Tim, I think it's Aston Martin itself, the you know, Lawrence Stroll led group that has, you know, taken this team essentially out of receivership, and they're turning it into one of the premier places to race in all of racing. You know, that gigantic brand new factory coming online. The fact that, you know, what's interesting about this, and I think, you know, we'll talk about this a little bit later in the episode when we talk about Andretti Cadillac, but you can see a direct result of Aston Martin being good, right? Because there was the year with Vettel and Stroll and the car wasn't competitive. And then the bump that Aston Martin sales took last year when Fernando came out flying. And, you know, the Valkyries themselves and some of the other luxury brands, there have been articles written about the fact that they're selling faster than they've ever seen before. And that's in a, you know, last year, especially in a bit of a downturn economy. It's pretty interesting. And so the marketing aspect of a brand like Aston Martin being in the sport is kind of undeniable. And a lot of the personality with Aston Martin currently is Fernando Alonso.
I mean, the guy has been operating on another level since he came back. I would say, like, first year back into Formula One since being away for a few years, it was a little rocky, I mean, to start off with. But, like, as soon as he started getting into it, I mean, he was incredible. And once he moved over to Aston Martin, and last year, just that team was just shot out of a cannon. Like, yeah. I don't even think they were expecting to be as competitive as they were, but they had nailed a certain part of the regulation that really sent them flying. And now, again, like, a young team stumbles and falls and then make mistakes, which this team did midway through the season, but they bounced back and they came back and they were stronger again towards the end of the season. I think for Aston Martin as a brand, I think it's very important to have a driver like a Fernando Alonso. And you look at Ferrari, right? I mean, Lewis Hamilton leaves Mercedes, goes to Ferrari. The stocks for Ferrari just go, like, you know, through the roof. Oh,
they made
like the
whatever money they were going to pay Lewis for Hamilton, sure. They made it in that day.
For sure. So, it shows you, I guess, the brand power the driver has, which is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, we never used to have that in motorsports. Like, the driver never was really, like, you know.
It was just a guy.
It was just kind of like the teams, right? It was always about the teams and the teams and the team. Now we're starting to be, like, more about, you know, the driver, and that's great. I love that. I think that's it's great for.
Could you be biased on that one, Tim, because you are a driver, or
maybe a little bit for sure. I mean,
but that's, like, a you good know, thing. But you have to have marketable superstars, like,
for
you
sure.
Know,
that's
any,
the thing.
Any league thing. That markets the team crest over the superstar loses. You see that in the NHL. You have to market superstars. Yeah, yes, yeah. The Chicago Bulls of the 90s were great, but who does everybody remember?
Jordan.
Michael Jordan. Yeah. And you know, Michael Schumacher, amazing race car driver, happens to be at a great race brand as well with Ferrari. But nobody remembers the United Colors of Benetton. They remember Michael Schumacher.
They remember Michael Schumacher, yeah.
So
they remember Michael Schumacher, the hardcores, like those who have always loved Formula One. You know, they remember Fernando Alonso at Renault. Maybe some of them don't necessarily remember what that team actually looked like or what the car was called or any of that kind of stuff, right? So, and that's where I think, and this is, you know, a long going topic, but it's like when we look at what F1 has done, not only for the sport and what Liberty Media has done for F1, you know, we're focused more on drivers now. We're talking more about drivers now. And then the teams are kind of almost secondary to that, which is, yeah, like, a, you know, it's kind of nice, right? I think drivers have a great story to tell, and they're the focal point of the team. So it's great when a driver, like, you got breaking news or something with a driver, you're like, oh yeah, you know, you get the Twitter and you start.
Speaking of Twitter, do we have listener questions?
Oh, yeah, I think we actually
check
do
that.
Adam.
One thing that I think that we should probably point out, and I'm sure there'll be a question about this, is people are going, how does this affect the driver market? Reality is, I think, Tim, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think it affects it all that much. It would have affected it more had Fernando signed anywhere else other than Aston Martin. But I think him staying there gives us no more clarity on the Carlos Sainz situation, no more clarity on the Sergio Perez situation. Yuki Tsunoda, what's going to happen in a couple years or next year? What, you know, Daniel Ricciardo, Nico Hulkenberg's up, Alex Albon's up in 25. Like, we just don't know. Yeah. So this one is more like it's still foggy, I guess. Right.
Yeah, I think, but it may also signal Adam that, like, we have more driver news that will be coming sooner than what we thought. I think, you know, a lot of us thought that driver news was going to start coming when we got to, like, August, summer break. Usually, you know, we get a lot of driver news then about switching teams and going to other places. But I think with this case, I think it signals the fact that, hey, teams are wanting to lock these drivers up as fast as as possible. They know they've got something, you know, good there, and that that driver is like really good. We got to hang on to him. They got a ton of experience. We got to sign him up for someone else takes him. You know, that I think we're starting to we're going to see that a lot sooner than we originally thought. We do have questions.
Let's go.
A few questions.
Oh, great.
All right. So from at X Nexus, do you really think that Fernando had other options, or is he signing for Aston Martin because Red Bull and Mercedes just weren't interested? That's a good question. You know, I think like Red Bull had some interest. I think Mercedes had some interest as well. I have a feeling, and you know, this is just a feeling, that I think Mercedes are in this spot where it's like, okay, do we want to bring Kimi Antonelli in early, or do we want to keep him in Formula 2 for a little bit longer? And they're still sort of evaluating what they want to do. I think for Red Bull, if Fernando Alonso had came over, I think Max Verstappen had to have left the team. Because I don't think they would have wanted to put those two together. They wouldn't, like, because Fernando is Fernando, man. He just... So, but there were some conversations with other teams. He didn't really elaborate exactly who those were, but I mean, like I said, you can guess. Yeah. I'm just reading these on the fly. So Steven,
go ahead.
Steven Clary, is this a sign Aston Martin is heading for a Spanish pairing with Carlos Sainz? So this would mean that essentially Lance Stroll would lose his seat at Aston Martin. I don't see that happening just at the moment. I mean, Lance had a difficult weekend in Japan. Jeddah could have been better, but outside of that, rebounded well in Bahrain, and then he had a great race in Australia. So,
If you were listening to our episode on Sunday, which is our previous episode, you talk about their setups were completely different because they were trying some things, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Lance had a different rear wing on the car, cost him time there, and that kind of made things more difficult trying to get through to Q2, Q3. This was I love emergency pods.
Me too.
Love breaking news. Love it when you know, we get some stuff to really dive into. It's always great. What do you think about the Alonso signing?
I love Fernando Alonso's social media, so that makes me happy. When he sat down and he just released a video about an hour ago about it, and I'm here to stay.
Yeah,
man, awesome. he's the best character in Formula One. He's the best character in Formula One. No doubt. It's great for Aston Martin. It's great for him. And I'm really excited to see what they do for the rest of the year. Because now that he's got that safety and security, I feel like it's just going to make him better.
Yeah, no, it's really cool, man. I'm excited. Yeah. Like I said, I've been watching Fernando Alonso since I was a kid. So
yeah,
this is
good
great.
Good time to buy some green merch, I think.
Oh, 100%. So how do we get into the next episode?
Not easily, Tim. We're gonna do a bad segue and say, hey, here's the original episode. It starts now, and enjoy in retrospect. It's a rainy day. Kind of reminds you of at any time F1 rolls through Spa in Toronto, and Tim's fire alarm is being tested as we record this podcast. So, Tim, was it your fault? Are you the reason?
No, I mean, this is the second time, Adam, that we've done a podcast in the last 7 days that the fire alarm has gone off. Because I remember, like, last week we had to, like, cut it short.
Yep.
Because my fire alarm started going off because the city of Toronto wants to test it. So here we are. They're testing the entire facility. And it may go off. So listeners, viewers, I'm very sorry.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. ArmorAll, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Well, you know what, Tim? It's great that we had the news that we had yesterday, because it's been a pretty quiet week after Suzuka. Like, you know, we did our race recap, but you know, I'm kind of looking at the headlines and not seeing much except for
you're not seeing much salacious headlines, Adam.
Well, this is what I do. I bring gossip to the show, and you slap it down. This is what we do. I don't know. Did you see the thing this morning?
Did somewhere
you see the thing this morning about Aston Martin waiting on Fernando Alonso's offer from Red Bull? Did you see that one?
I don't even have time. Like,
you don't even have time. You're not even going to make. So you're saying that Red Bull has offered Fernando Alonso a contract. Is that what you're saying?
No. It's like we discussed on Sunday, right? I think for Alonso, like Verstappen, you know, it can't be at Red Bull. And I think for Fernando, he wants something that's a little more longer term. And Aston Martin want him. They want to keep him. So there you
it's
go.
It's a perfect fit, and he shouldn't go. No. But the big news yesterday was the official opening of the Andretti Racing facilities. It's Silverstone. Yeah. Silverstone Park, as you told me before the show here. And I think, you know, some people probably looking at that had questions. And not because it's not great news. It is great news. Number one, though, they were denied entry to the sport.
Yep.
Number two, Andretti Mario Andretti did have a Formula One championship, but they're known for North American racing more than European racing, especially of late with the IndyCar connections and NASCAR and everything else that they've been involved in. So why open a facility in Silverstone?
Well, I mean, like Michael keeps telling me, it's... you know, all plans are go. So,
okay,
here we go. Right. So, I mean, it all comes back to when, you know, FIA obviously granting them approval to take part in Formula One and be on the grid. It all comes down to FOM, the commercial rights holder of Formula One. And what is their deal? What does it look like? You know, we've spoken on the show in the past, and you can go back to January and have a listen to those or watch them. And, you know, a big part of it obviously is, you know, that anti-dilution fee and the amount of money that teams are not wanting to part with, obviously, right? Splitting up that pie of constructors standing on the financial side. And I can understand that because the sport is in a bigger place. The sport has way more eyeballs on it than it ever has. You're selling out like Grand Prix after Grand Prix after Grand Prix. And it's healthy. And so the teams are now financially stable thanks to the budget cap. Mm-hmm. And they are now profitable thanks to the budget cap. And then they're making money off of the constructor standings, which is big time money, right? You're talking about splitting up over $1 billion between 10 teams.
I mean, I didn't realize it was that much.
Yeah, it's a ton of money for these teams, right? And so they don't want to water that down. And I get that for sure. And so you and I have talked about the anti-dilution fee. And I think that's probably the best part to start before we get deeper into the Andretti conversation of what they're doing now and full steam ahead, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the anti-dilution fee at the moment is set at $200 million. And this was brought about during the pandemic when the teams signed off on the Concorde Agreement. Concorde Agreement keeps everybody together in Formula One under the same roof, under the same rules, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, Adam, like, you know, when we look at other teams, and the Seattle Kraken is one that's one that comes up quite a bit. Even Toto Wolff made mention of it at the British
Seattle
Grand
Kraken.
Prix last July, because they were essentially the next expansion team to take part in a major North American sport, and how much their sort of anti-dilution fee was. I believe it was like over
650 million.
Yeah, I was going to say 75, but 50. Okay, so there you go, right? So F1 is like, okay, well, this is what's going on here and in other sports. And you look at like what the NFL's doing, and F1's not putting itself on the same sort of pedestal as the NFL. But when they take a look at the landscape and they're like, well, we're worth way more than that. And a new team that's coming in should have to pay something similar or more. our mm-hmm. teams are now worth in the billions. So this only makes more sense for us to get more money. And so this Concord agreement, well, it ends at the end of 2025, and they have to renegotiate a new one. And in that comes the conversation of an anti-dilution fund. If another team gets added to the grid, what's it going to have to pay for that anti-dilution fee? And I think this is where a lot of this kind of comes in, where they're not really wanting Andretti to come in, and the teams are a little hesitant because of that. That's what it kind of looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And the FIA is not really, or sorry, the F1's really not talking much about Andretti anymore after what had gone down yesterday. There are still some conversations happening between the Andretti's and F1 and FOM and stuff mm-hmm. like that behind the scenes, which is good. It's just part of what they had put out back, I believe it was January 31st, when the statement from F1 came out, basically denying Andretti Global from participating in Formula One. I think, you know, when how do I want to word this so it's understandable? It's such a complex conversation. I think, like, when they put that out, and the way it's kind of worded, it had some strong wording in it, but part of it was kind of like, okay, well, it doesn't make sense for you to participate in Formula One in 2025, which was the goal, mm-hmm. or 2026, which for me, I can understand not wanting them to participate in 2025. I don't, however, understand or agree with 2026, because you've got a full-on regulation change. You've got a full-on power unit change. So if you're going to spend money to develop a 2025 car, which is going to be totally different to the 2026 car, then I understand sort of saving them from themselves.
Sure.
But what I don't understand, Adam, is why not allow them to come in 2026, do that deal with Renault or Alpine for their engines mm-hmm. for a few years. And as Michael said the other day, you know, Cadillac, GM, they're building an engine for 2028. They've signed off on that.
Right.
So you see what I'm saying, how that part of it just doesn't make sense. And then if you take a look at, like, anti-dilution fee, the Concord agreement, when all of those things sort of switch over, I mean,
Tim, what doesn't make sense to me is why doesn't Formula One, and FIA has already signed off on this, as you mentioned, why don't the Formula One teams just put a dollar amount on it and we could be done with this? Like, just put a dollar amount on it.
But then again, like, doesn't that, you know, that would break the Concord agreement, right? Like, that would break the signed off, like, anti-dilution fee that's already in there. And who knows if Michael is sinking his teeth into that, like, that stuff that's happening behind the scenes that nobody knows, right?
Right. But if you know it's going to expire, like, just say, okay, as a part of the new deal in 2026, you guys can come in, but you're paying $1 billion.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. If I'm running, you know, FOM,
mm-hmm.
That's something I would do. Like, I would go down, I would talk to the teams, and I would say, look, if we all sign up this Concord agreement, this is what this deal is going to look like. This is what this anti-dilution fee is going to look like as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then propose that and see what happens. The thing is that, like, you know, Michael's full steam ahead on this.
Well, of course he is. And I know that they're, and I didn't know that this was widely reported, but they are going to enter Formula 3 and Formula 2. As
yes.
well.
Yes.
So, like, they're fully committed to driver development.
Yep.
They're fully committed to bringing a powertrain online, you know, by the end of the decade, which is no small feat. A lot of people think that that's just an easy, oh, you just create an engine. This is like a spaceship. This is not some Escalade engine. This is a big deal that they're putting this together. And obviously it's an incredible marketing deal to make Cadillac what it should be, which is a luxury brand that is a worldwide brand that competes with Mercedes, competes with Audi, competes with, on the lower end, Ferrari. You know, that's what it should be. And McLaren too. And I think I think that what bothers me about this situation is that the Formula One teams won't just say, here's the dollar amount for 2026. Pay this. It's going to be exorbitant and you're in. Because it's not like we don't have room. We've seen as many as 12 teams in Formula One before. Everybody wants another team. Mm-hmm. And when you see teams like, and I don't believe the reports, by the way, that Alpine are going to go up for sale. I don't believe that at all. Now, maybe you have some insights that I don't, Tim. But, you know, when people are like, oh, Andretti should just buy Alpine. No. We need more teams, not 10 teams. And I think the money brought in from having two American teams, and Haas has done a really bad job of identifying with American fans, if I'm being honest. You know, the Ural Colli, you know, Russian car for a bit, and the Rich Energy, which was a British company. They didn't do a great job of bringing in sponsors that really reflected America. I think the MoneyGram thing is a good sponsorship. But
yeah, I think that's great. Chipotle as well, also another...
100%. But, you know, they didn't even bring in an American driver. Maybe there weren't any ready, but there are plenty of great IndyCar American drivers they could have put in one of those slots, right?
Oh, I always pushed like Joseph Newgarden, like yes. Back in the day. I always pushed that, back, I would say 2015, 2016. I was always like, Joseph Newgarden, why don't they take a look at Joseph Newgarden? You got to get him in a seat. You got to test this guy. He's the real deal. Look, like, you know, this is back, you know, when he was a lot younger. I mean, obviously, maybe a little more challenging now, but. No, sorry to cut you off, Adam, but yeah.
No, I mean, I think it's just like, and I think Andretti's going to come in and I think they're going to do it right. Are they going to be competitive right away? Are they going to be a top five team right away? Probably not. Nobody is. But I think when you look at, if Andretti does this right, they'll have at least one, maybe two, very likely two American drivers to start. They'll probably bring one of them over from IndyCar and they'll bring in some, you know, if I were them, I would go with two experienced Americans the first time I'm on the track, because you want to make sure that, you know, A, you've got the American identity. B, you've got the experience. You don't want rookies in a rookie car on a rookie team. That's just, to me, it seems like a bad idea. But you've got everything available to you to make Formula One an even better and more competitive and richer sport. Sure. And this is where I get frustrated with these teams, because I know that they don't like change, and it's very European to want things to be the way that they are, and this is the way we've always done things. And I respect how American the Andretti's are by just building the facility anyway. Oh, we don't have approval. You know what? We're just going to spend what is it? $500 million to put a facility. Let's just do it.
We're going to build it. We're coming.
And you know what they can do, Tim? They are not under any cost cap. They can go bring every engineer that they want. If they want to blow their brains out, spending crazy money, bringing all the engineers over from the other teams and pulling them out of Formula One. They can do that right now. They can do that. Well, and they can do that for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, they've already got a staff of over 100 folks like working on their Formula One project at the moment. And they're all working out at that base at Silverstone, which is going to be like basically the aerodynamics base, where they're going to be developing that portion of the car, plus also the mechanical side of it as well. And then everything, Adam, is going to be put together in Fishers, Indiana, at this state-of-the-art facility that Michael's building at the moment. And that's the thing with Michael, right? He wants this to be a full American team in a fully built American race car, which is awesome. I think that's incredible. It's going to be extremely difficult when you start to break down like freight and how do you get parts places and like how do you bring upgrades and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's obviously a challenge for further in the future, but I mean, I think, Adam, you know, it's a cool initiative. The fans are on board. Fans want to see it. You know, I do too. Like it'd create more storylines for us, Adam. It would give drivers a better chance at cracking into F1. They would have more seats for drivers to go if, you know, Michael were to take a driver that wasn't American and put them into the car. Like there's just so many possibilities with it. And, you know, I don't see, and yes, look, I understand the team's not wanting to lose that money in the constructors' standings. Mm-hmm. And the thing is like,
they're not going to.
Yeah. I mean, like at the end of the day, I don't think that would end up happening, but you have a team like Prema who just recently signed an agreement to race an IndyCar. Mm-hmm. That's a team that has competed in every level of European racing, has a team in almost pretty much every single level of European racing, except for Formula One. Mm-hmm. They've been on the Formula 2 grid forever. They have been training drivers to get into F1 since, like, Jacques Villeneuve. Like,
yep.
You know how long ago that was? So, and even they aren't, they don't have a team in F1.
And they should too.
I think they should. I mean, if they had the backing, if they had the proper infrastructure, if it's something they really wanted to do, then yes. I mean, they are qualified for it. They know what they're doing. They've been involved. They've been around the sport. They know what's happening. And so I think when we look at this, you know, that IndyCar field is growing, Adam. I mean, they're going to have probably close to 30 cars. I mean, that's huge.
That's dude, crazy.
When I was in Champ Car, we were lucky if we had 16 cars on the grid and that sport was just clinging to life. And now look at it. 30
That's
cars.
Amazing.
30. And so for F1, it only makes sense to get another team in there. And like, obviously for the reasons that I listed why. But yeah, obviously there's the business side of this too, right? So we need to see what that looks like.
Now, it was speculated yesterday that part of the reason you opened the facility at Silverstone too is to attract great talent and keep the prices down. Because obviously there's going to be bits and pieces that need to be done in the UK or in Europe, that when that cost cap is applied to the Andretti team, having a team facility over there will help with that. Can you tell me how? Like how will that benefit them?
Like the facility itself, like having that,
yeah.
I think that's a great question. When I kind of look at all of it, I think a big part of it is just trying to recruit really good personnel from Formula One, keep folks close to home, make sure that like they're close to sort of their home base as well. And there's a ton of talent over there, right, Adam? Like there is a ton. There's so much. And so I think for Michael, that's the right move, right? You need to recruit the best talent. You need to get everybody under one roof, make sure that they're comfortable, make sure that everyone's happy to go to work, to go back home, be close to their families, all that kind of great stuff. So, I mean, that's the way I would set it up. That's the way it looks like it's being handled and done.
Mm-hmm.
I just, I was actually like, you know, I knew Michael was building something because he told us, right, that they were building. I just didn't know like how soon it was that this thing was going to be open. Like I knew he had people working on a car. I knew he had thrown something in the wind tunnel, but like I didn't know just how close this thing was to actually like being opened up. And then once I saw it, I was like, oh boy, here we go. Well,
and he's sort of done it. I mean, I guess if you're in the sport and you're well connected, you've probably seen this happening, but it does feel like it happened overnight.
It does.
Yeah. And Tim, I want to ask too, like, okay, for the long-term Andretti success, one of the things that it's speculated holds Alpine back is two facilities. They've got one facility, I believe it's in Enstone, right?
Yep.
And then the other one,
France.
Where is the other one? Where in France?
The engine portion of the Renault Alpine project is handled in France. And then the car building concepts, design, implementation, that's all done in Enstone. That factory actually is a little bit too small. They are actually looking for something a little bit bigger in the past. That's what they were trying to do. And I think with this day and age in F1, it's really hard to have things like separated. There goes my fire alarm. Apologies, everyone. but it's really hard to have things separated, right? Like you have to kind of have everything under one roof. And I think that's extremely important that you do because it helps speed everything up. Your program, it helps speed up getting the car developed and put together and get to a track. So when you have things located in different parts of the world, something similar to like Haas, like I think that situation's a little bit too fragmented. You have sort of three working bases in different parts of the world. It, you know, you got one in Italy, you got one in the UK, you got one in the States, and it's a little too much, right? You don't mm-hmm. have the proper infrastructure under one roof, and that's what's so important, right? Having everything under one roof.
So how will Andretti figure that out?
Yeah, Alpine, that's the thing.
They're a major manufacturer. Like they're no joke, right? They've won world championships. How will Andretti get over that?
Yeah, I think that's going to be so tough. I mean, it's like I said a few minutes ago, like it's hard. How do you take things that are being, you know, built over in the UK, different time zone, and then obviously transfer that data over to the US, another time zone, and then have things start to be worked out? How do you get the parts to the car in a quick fashion? I mean, if you take a look at what F1, some of the teams do now, you know, when they have like a big upgrade, that doesn't really come to the car or get unleashed until they get to the European leg, right? They don't normally send huge upgrades to different parts of the world. I mean, I think like McLaren may have something for Miami. I mean, Aston Martin had something very big go to Japan. But if you look at Ferrari, I mean, they didn't really have anything, and they probably won't really have anything until they get to the European leg. Maybe Imola. Maybe then they may unleash something. But and that's the thing, right? You're saving on freight at that moment. You're allowing there to be more time to work out the kinks with the car or else your design. And so I think that's why that's just so important to make sure everything is under one roof. And that's one of the things with this Andretti project. When I take a look at it, I think that's going to be really, really tough for them to achieve, Adam. I think that's extreme. I think you need to either have everything built in the UK or you have everything done in the States, and then you bring those upgrades when you get to the North American leg of the Formula One calendar.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. And I look at, and again, you're the expert, I'm just the guy watching, but it's sort of, it does feel like that is going to be a hurdle. And yes, okay, video conferencing's great. Like, we're doing that essentially here recording this show.
For sure,
but
yeah, for sure.
We're also not putting together the equivalent of a rocket ship, right? You know, it does help to be in the same room on certain things. And you need the ability to just walk down to somebody's office and bounce an idea off them.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that's like, if you take a look at what Aston Martin has done with their new facility, a lot of that has to do with what you just said, right? It's a very open concept. And for them, their idea is that the more open the concept, the more you are to engage with your coworker on ideas for the car or ideas with your program. I'm a big proponent of that. I think it's smart, and yeah, you make a great point, right? Like, so how is somebody who's working over in the UK going to be able to go down to John Smith's desk and start bouncing ideas off them? I mean, they're not. So that I think is also a bit of an issue.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, it's gonna be a fascinating few years in Formula One for that reason. Like,
but what do you think, Adam? Like, what do you think about the whole project?
Well, to me, it first off, I love Americans. My mom's an American, so I'm half American, and I love especially American business. I find in Canada, and yeah, I find in Europe, it's like, do we want to make money, or do we want to have a committee about it and whatever? Americans are like, oh, can we make money? Bang, 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 bang. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
And you know, like that I really respect boldness. I really do. And that is the American way. That's how they've built the country. That is the culture of the country. And the reason that Europeans and Americans have friction is because America just barges in and goes, we're doing this now too.
Yeah.
And it could be geopolitical. It could be sports, it could be anything you're talking about. That is how Americans act. And so I love that they're going to do this. I love that they're going to be in Formula 3. I love that they're going to be in Formula 2, because I think having the name brand Andretti is, I mean, even passive fans have heard the name Andretti. It doesn't matter if, you know, like my wife, who was not a huge Formula One fan before Drive to Survive, knew about the Andretti's anyway. It's just something that you learn, especially, you know, in North America. And I think having the money that Andretti Cadillac will bring to racing is a really, really good thing as well. And, you know, I look at the sport and, you know, it's sort of funny. It's Formula One is a little bit like baseball in the sense that there will be people who don't watch baseball and they'll tell you baseball is super boring because, there's a lot of waiting, there's a lot of this, there's a lot of that. And yeah, to some extent in the past, they've been right. They've fixed a little bit of it with the pitch clock and that sort of thing. Formula One has done those things too. Well, there was no passing for a while. Well, they fixed that with DRS. There was no cost cap, which meant some teams had $600 million budgets. Other teams had $50 million budgets. That's been fixed. And the field is coming closer and closer and closer together. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, yes, Formula One saw an enormous growth right around 2018 to 2021, just an enormous pop, and nobody was expecting it. Tim, I think that Formula One is going to see another big pop. I think it's going to crest for a while during the Max Verstappen era until 2026. And when they can develop a story like we had in 2021 with Lewis versus Max, you know, like that is, it's so crazy because if you look at Ferrari, so close. If McLaren can bring a few upgrades in the next few races, McLaren will be like that with Ferrari. But until you get that top team being knocked off a peg, it's very difficult. And because you just can't sell it to past fans. Oh, same team wins every time, then I don't care. And to say that these races are boring is disingenuous. It means you didn't watch. It means you're not paying attention. So I think that injections of money, I'm pro-billionaire on this one. Bring more billionaires into the sport, make them competitive, make them spend their money, and put this sport where it belongs. It is the most exclusive racing circuit in the world. It doesn't mean that it's always the best racing. I've seen incredible NASCAR races. I've seen incredible IndyCar races. I've seen amazing Le Mans, you know, 24-hour races. But I got to tell you, there's something magical about Formula One, and to me, it's criminal how much North America has missed out on it because it hasn't been included. And
we see boring NBA games. We see boring NHL game. I got news for you. That NHL game you did last week, the live stream.
Oh my God.
That boring. Was one of the, I turned it off after like 5 minutes.
Cause I was so boring. I was so bad.
No, not you. I turned the game off. Why am I watching this? It was so bad. So yeah.
Yeah, there's an entire era of hockey, Tim, that's called the dead puck era.
But
where where players were getting a point a game and that was going to win you a scoring title, whereas now the scoring title winner is going to be 130 or 140 points. You know what I mean? Like it's just Connor McDavid is going to have 100 assists this year. Like that is, and Nikita Kucherov might do the same thing. Might have two guys and then another guy scoring 70 goals if Matthews gets it. Like that. So what we need in Formula One is a regulation shift. I think the one thing they gotta look at, Tim, is making these cars smaller again. I think they're too big and they're too heavy. The whole thing about Formula One is they're supposed to be rocket ships, right? And I understand the hybrid concept and I understand how much that did for hybrid engines worldwide. I'm concerned about the 2026 regulations. They don't sound great at this point. We gotta get back to that, and we got to get back to Formula One being what it is, which is the most competitive sport in the world. And I know I'm rambling here,
let it out, Adam.
2026, man, that's where I think the next rise is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you. I think there's a couple things there that you kind of touched on. You know, I think when you look at having a brand like Cadillac or GM coming mm-hmm. into a racing sport, that I think it's really, that's a big deal. I mean, obviously they've signed up for 2028 and it is a project that they are currently working on for a power unit for Formula One for 2028. I think like having a brand like a GM coming into your sport, like Formula One, mm-hmm. that's really huge. That's big. It's very big. And you look at some of the other engine manufacturers that are starting to get involved in Formula One now too. You're going to have Audi, part of the Volkswagen group, coming in 2026. And then you also have everyone else that's currently on board. That's really big for your sport. Now you can't let the engine part of it dictate your regulation, the direction you want the sport to go in. That's kind of actually happening at the moment with the regulation for 2026. And if some of you saw the report that Jonathan Noble did, I reposted it on my Twitter. You can go and check it out. But they're talking a lot about active aero and for 2026 and how is that going to be implemented? How are they going to be able to use it? At first, they were talking about just the rear wing being active aero, but further testing reveals that it actually is a bit of a huge issue having active aero in the rear. So they're talking about having active aero at the front and at the back of the car. Now, I don't know if this is a great direction to take the sport in. Like, I don't really agree with the DRS either.
Right? Okay.
You have to remember, like, when I was racing, I'm going to go back to when I was old, you really had to outwork somebody. You had to outthink them. It was a game of chess. Like, you were really trying to outthink the driver in front of you. And at this moment, you still kind of have that. There are still instances where you do have that, but then you also sometimes have an easy DRS pass and you're just like, oh my God, like, what was that? Sometimes, like, when I see a DRS pass on a really long straightaway, I kind of like, just cringe a little bit. It's like, no one's working for that.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I saw a clip this morning. It's an old Bottas Lewis Hamilton clip where Valtteri was like, it was a fan question. And he said, the fan wants to know, what's the angriest you've seen Toto? And they were talking about Barcelona when Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton crashed into each other.
Because
Rosberg cut him off, right?
Yeah, like that. He was pissed that day.
Of course he was. and Lewis, like, if you look at that clip, Lewis won. Like, Lewis was going to pass Rosberg. He got him on the exit.
Well, Nico had the wrong setting on the steering wheel.
Is that what happened?
That's what happened. Like, he had the car in the wrong setting to start the race.
Oh no.
And so that's how Lewis was able to get such an advantage. And then obviously the two of them collided.
God, that's crazy. Okay, so this is even another wrinkle. But I see what you mean about that, because that was not a DRS pass. That was just a...
Oh, two guys racing. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I do kind of like the DRS, because, like, I loved how Alonso towed Piastri along in Suzuka and just... And it was like, you know what? I'm going to use DRS in defense. That's kind of fun, right? Like, it's a different thing. But I see what you're saying. And Tim, the thing I love about where we're at right now, and again, I know we're off track, but who cares? It's a podcast.
Adam, is going to be really nice.
Well, do you see? Okay, so when you were racing, and what happened in 2009 to you? 2008, 2009.
Yeah, well, I mean, recession hit, and that was the end of my career. So
right. And what happened? Well, and the reason for that is all the manufacturers pulled out of the sport, and all the sponsors did, too.
That was sponsorship and the manufacturers leaving the sport were pretty pretty huge. I mean, it wasn't
BMW,
good.
Toyota, yeah. Honda,
I mean,
all just, gone.
Yeah, Ford. And then if you look at, like, I can't remember exactly what we did with when we were in Champ Car, but I think Cosworth was making the engine. It was badged by Ford, but Ford wasn't making the engine. It was actually Cosworth who was making the engine, and Ford was just sort of badging it, if I remember correctly. It was a long time ago, but
Well, and
it was tough, Adam. It was really hard, and that's why I say, like, when you get when you get auto manufacturer involvement in the sport, it's great up to a point.
They want to be competitive
together.
They want to
be competitive. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Like, that wasn't that long ago. I know 15 years to some people feels like a long time ago, but, like, it feels like the blink of an eye to me. And Tim, you know, the fact that a company like General Motors can turn its gigantic Titanic company around to this idea, that is a spectacular thing for this sport.
Huge.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, it's huge. It's really big for folks who are new to F1 or new to racing. Like, it is a really big deal that an auto manufacturer, an OEM, whatever you want to call it, like General Motors, wants to get involved with your sport. It is really big. Same with like Audi. If you look at Honda, same thing, right? Ferrari, same thing. Renault, same thing. It goes down the line. Mercedes, et cetera. So like it is a very big deal. You just can't let whatever the regulation with the engine is dictate what you're going to do and how to build the race car for the racing. That's I don't know how good of an idea that is.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
My 2 cents on that. we'll see what happens, right? 2026 is a long way to go, and we still don't know what the regulations are going to be. Those things haven't been, you know, stamped in fine print. We have no idea at this moment. We know what the engine regulation is going to be, but we don't know what the car regulation is going to be at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, long story short, this is all a really, really good thing. And I hope that one day we can get an Andretti global ambassador on so we can talk to them about it directly.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure you know
what I can.
People.
I'll see what I can dig up, Adam.
If you know anybody. but Tim, what do you got planned for this weekend? I obviously know that the Indy 500 tests were canceled today because of rain. What are you going to do? What's going on? Non-F1?
Man, I got like, we got improv. We got improv going on, you know.
You do improv.
I don't do improv. My partner does improv. She's great at it. So going to go support her. But we got a show that we're going to watch. And then Saturday, I'm just taking it easy.
Okay.
Just going to take it easy. Probably go to the movies on Sunday evening.
Mm-hmm.
Catch a film, see what's out.
What are you going to watch? What are you going to go for?
I don't know,
for?
Man. I like that. What was it? It was Monkey Man. Looks kind of cool.
It does. Yeah, it does.
So I'm kind of interested what that's all about. So we'll see. But yeah, man, just try to take it easy and get ready for the next week. And it's because once you get into those Grand Prix weekends or whatever, it's, it goes up to another level, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, when we talked on Sunday, you looked like you'd gone to war. Like, it was just like, the funny thing about you, Tim, is you're always so high energy. And then you're like, okay, so I'm ready to record whenever you are.
I was ready to go to bed. Dude, yeah, I was ready to go to sleep, man. I was ready to go to sleep.
Well, you did a great show, man. And thank you for the insight today. I'm excited about the future of this sport. I'm excited about this Andretti stuff. I think it's hard not to root for a company that goes for it like they do.
Yeah, 100%, but Adam.
You know what? They kind of run their company like you want to run a race car. You got to go for it.
Yeah.
And so, Tim, enjoy the weekend. Break a leg to your partner on her show. You do not say best of luck to a thespian. And we'll see you Monday.
Yeah, thanks again, bud. Really appreciate it.